First I was a Catholic girl, loved the mass, I watched the swirl of smoke from candles burning, while Mary looked up yearning. I got confirmed and I confessed.
Hello and welcome to the Digital Free Thought Radio Hour, on WOZO Radio 103.9 LPFM here in Knoxville, Tennessee. We're recording this on Sunday morning, December 3rd, 2023. I'm Larry Rhodes, or DJ Doubter 5, and as usual, we have our co-host Wombat on the line with us. Hello, Wombat.
Yo, what's up? How is everybody?
We're fine. And our special guest today, Dreda Pirate Higgs. Welcome.
Ooh, a special guest.
We're ranked up there now. Digital Free Thought Radio Hour is a talk radio show about atheism, free thought, rational thought, humanism, and the sciences. And conversely, we'll also talk about religion, religious faith, Pastafarianism, gods, holy books, and superstition. And I think my voice is going away. Excuse me. If you think you're the only non-believer in your town, well, you're just not. Here in Knoxville, in the middle of the Bible Belt, we have a group of over 1,100 of us. We're the Atheist Society of Knoxville, or ASK, and we'll tell you more about us after the mid-show break, so be sure to stick around. Wombat, what's our topic today?
You are what you eat, and it all comes down to input and output, but that goes beyond just your diet, your beliefs, your inner circles. It also goes to how you consume pasta and what that entails, and who better to lead us on a discussion of consuming pasta than our own Dread Pirate Higgs, will lead us with our daily or weekly invocation. Go for it, Dred.
Noodly Lord, who art in a colander, El Dante be thy noodles. Thy blood be rum, thy sauce be yum, with meat as it is with vegetables. Give us this day our garlic bread, and forgive us our cussing, as we forgive those who cuss against us. And lead us not into ketoism, but deliver us some carbs. For thine are the meatballs, and the noodles, and the grog, whenever and ever.
Man. Guys, I just came back from a 2-mile run, which would be what? One and a quarter kilometer. I think that might be appropriate.
I think it'd be more like almost three.
Okay, 3 kilometers.
Something like that. Yeah.
Okay, you multiply it by two. It's either multiply by two or a little bit more than half. I have to keep going back in my head. But yes, So yes, that right. Then I realized we had the show, so I ran back in and like drained myself of all the sweat, and now I'm sitting here. So all my nervous energy has been taken up by that morning run. If I don't take care of myself, I can't expect to have good health, right? So that's one, my responsibility, two, something I'm accountable for, and three, something that I understand that there's a clear, I am what I do to myself, what I feed myself, how I take care of myself. And I want to talk about that on today's show. But before we get into that, would love to catch up with everybody. Larry, how you been? Your brand new knee, how's it working? Also, you lost your voice. Are you going to get another one through surgery or Amazon?
I guess my voice is my voice this morning. It's just usually bad in the morning. It's just lasting longer today for some reason. And my knee, it's just going to keep going for a while. It's only been 2 weeks since the surgery, my knee replacement surgery. So that's kind of a major thing. So it's just going to take like a couple of months to come back online.
What do you mean a major thing? You just slap a Band-Aid on it. They get you out the door. You go to McDonald's, you get a Happy Meal, and you come back home and you can just like spring around and stuff like that.
That is the dream, but it doesn't often work that way.
Dread Pirate Higgs, in the dawn of a new day, how are you, my friend?
Good. It's I can just see the horizon starting to brighten behind me. Again, I'm just up in Fort St. John doing the medic thing.
Yeah, Western Canada for new listeners.
Yeah, Western Canada, British Columbia, Northern British Columbia. So I've done a bunch of upgrading and additional training. So looking forward to not having to spend my 12-hour shift in a truck.
Nice.
Or I can spend it in, a cabin or a medic shack or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So,
very cool.
But,
well, thank you for your service.
As long as they keep paying me,
yeah, thank you for your service. Yeah,
for being a frontline protector.
Right. Also, how beautiful is it?
Well, we're having elk burgers today.
Elk burgers, nice. Elk burgers.
Cool.
Burgers. Yeah. So that'll be a nice treat.
Cool.
Very cool. I'm glad somebody's eating those foods too. I always look at horses and say, "Man, these things look delicious. Why don't people eat them?" Like, look at all the meat. It's right there. They're like, "No, we don't want to eat
it's
horses."
Right there.
I say to myself, I'd rather have something that looks lean and healthy than a fat cow. Because in my opinion, you are what you eat, in a sense. Like, it's so weird that we swapped one for the other.
Some societies take advantage of that.
Yeah. Oh, really? Yeah. Okay. I knew no bison used to be a thing. And then we said, hey, we're running out of bison. So maybe it's just a question of how many cow or horses we can actually make. But they look delicious. That's just me. Just my carnivore thinking. But I want to consider the idea that there is such a thing as input output. And to talk about this in more detailed sense, I remember taking a survey a long time ago. This was in high school. And I think they said it was like some sort of weird, fraternity wannabe sort of thing where they said, hey, tell me your ideal partner, tell me your ideal girlfriend, boyfriend, et cetera. And one of the things they said was, do you value the body or the mind? And in my head, I saw that and I thought, what a silly question, because it's always going to be body, 10,000% body. But there was like almost a moral implication to mark body and not mind, because people would say, oh, you just care about body dynamics, curvature, size. I said, no, because your mind is a part of your body. I had it going on even when I was back in school. I said, your mind isn't a separate thing from your body. It's a emergent property of your body. If you don't take care of your body, you'll see that in your mind. You never have a very healthy mind and a completely unhealthy body, because it's the output of a healthy body. Like, a mind is an output of what your body is, and your body's a source for your input.
I don't know. There's a lot of questions there.
To me. I love to get deep into it.
Stephen Hawking, his body was a wreck, but he had an incredible mind.
I hear what you're saying, though. Let me throw this out at you. In this sense, your mind is a product of a functional brain, right? Properly working brain.
Yeah.
If you were to cut off both my legs and Stephen Hawking's legs, I imagine we would still think the same way. We might be like, ow, 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 ow. Why did you do that? Mm-hmm. Maybe less so on Stephen Hawking's case. I don't know what his fidelity for sensitivity is for his extremities. But your brain is what I'm referring to in this context. So thank you, Larry. I could be a bit more specific. But your brain is the source or the input source for your output mind, right?
Mm-hmm.
The if you were to damage Stephen Hawking's brain, either by giving him like LSD, some weird concoction of alcohol, or put him to sleep, you know, put him in a assisted coma, he's not going to function mentally the same way, because you've altered the chemistry that goes on in his brain. His mind, whether it's through abuse or physical trauma or chemical manipulation or stress or diet, is all dependent on the status of his body. When in this case, I'm referring to his brain. So yes, I understand what you're saying, Larry, but I'm specifically talking about the brain in this sense.
Yeah.
So the main thing I want to say is, what do I mean by input and output, and how can that affect people who are raised religiously with regard to, you know, their diets, not just from the food that they eat, but the people they interact with, the ideas that they deal with every day? And what are the implications of having a indoctrinated input or a limited input or a prejudiced input, or one that's based on low standards of evidence? What does that output look like in society, and how does that affect everybody else? So I will throw this up to Larry first. Larry, have you seen examples of input output and the way how people are raised affecting how they act and treat people in society as an adult?
Well, sure. Like, really religious people, they have lost their evidentiary link to reality. And it's no longer linked to the evidence that they see around them, because it's more linked to the anecdotes and the stories in their holy books that where they get their sense of reality. Now, even after some of them, and I just mean some, have lost their religions, they still go on to other woo things, more things that are not tied to evidence, like spirituality, horoscopes.
Astrology, yeah.
Right, things like that.
Personality tests.
Yep. Because it's more based in the fact that they're no longer looking at evidence to base their reality, but more going with what their gut says, what they want to believe.
So it's not even picking on religious people, which isn't really the goal of the show. It's more of like, hey, if you don't have a good input for having a high standard of evidence and a good criteria for knowing what's true and recognizing when things are false and modifying what you believe as a result of that, or what you can be convinced of because of that, and have like a good, healthy, skeptical diet, right? Even if you leave religion, you'll fall into almost inevitably into another weird loop of woo, as Larry puts it so respectfully, or pseudoscience, which could be just as misleading as, hey, I am a reasonable person. I like science. And that's why I don't vaccinate my kids, because I think there's snake venom in it, because I watched this one podcast where a guy said there was snake venom in all the COVID vaccines. Mm-hmm. And that's the reason why people are getting sick. And I know I sound crazy right now, like I just made up that example. That's an actual conversation I had this week in the gym, where I was approached by a person who I know at the gym, who, when asked me, hey, I heard you had COVID, are you well? And I said, yeah, I had COVID a while back ago, and I think all my symptoms are pretty much okay. I have some weird taste things, but for the most part, everything's back to normal. And before I could finish that sentence, she's like, I know why it's not normal, because COVID is snake venom and they put it in the vaccines, and that's why you have it. And you need to listen to these doctors, and these doctors, the ones who are telling the truth, and it's all a conspiracy. And that's why I don't vaccinate my kids. And there's a reason for that. It's because of religion. And I thought to myself, whoa, this is a moment where I need to maybe step back and think about, should I go the Socratic examination route, or should I just try to disengage? Because I came here to work out. And right. It's so hard. It's hard. You know how Tennessee is. You say hi to someone, they give you their life story. Mm-hmm. But
so what'd you do?
So I tried the SC approach. And the thing was, I asked her.
SC meaning street epistemology.
True, but I think street epistemology sort of like evolved into something that no longer reflects what Socratic. I do normally anymore. It's Socratic examination. I'm just asking genuine questions. I'm not giving a flip chart.
Right.
And I don't have a prescribed way of doing it that's like taught in a class. Like my way is just, I'm trying to focus on having a meaningful conversation first. And so when I'm doing it, I just ask open-endedly, like, how did you come to this conclusion? Let's talk about the method, if you wouldn't mind. And she told me, I don't think about the methods. I just want to talk about the conclusion. I haven't put a lot of thoughts in the methods. And I want to highlight why that's like a valuable thing to discuss. Because if we think about how we come to a conclusion, we can actually come to better terms of how reliable and how justified we are in the confidence of the end goal, the conclusion.
I know. I mean, for her to come out and say, I haven't thought much about it, it's kind of a giveaway to the whole thing.
Yeah. Right. But
go ahead.
No, you're right. You're right. In my opinion, it's like a reflection of the input.
Yeah. Did you point that out to her?
I did. And so the weird thing was, she wanted to justify her 100% confidence.
Sure.
I'm completely closed-minded on this belief system. Then she eventually moved it down to 98 by the end of the conversation. So I was happy with that. That's fine with me. I'm pretty, it doesn't take much time, guys. But at the end of it, she said, I believe it because a doctor told me, or I heard it from a doctor who works on vaccines. And I said, I'm a doctor that works on vaccines. And she says, well, I don't believe you because you believe something different. And I'm like, oh, isn't that
telling?
isn't that concerning? Yeah. She said, okay, I get it. And then she, I'm only 98%. I'm willing to say I'm wrong on things. And then she walked away. And I'm like, okay. Saved myself some time. Let's get back to the workout. It was a really good workout at the end of the day. Dredd, I'd love to hear more about input-output from you. And have you seen examples of that in Canada? The home of the free and the polite.
Well, there's a fairly large, well, I wouldn't say, they're vocal. Anti-vax, anti-mandate in particular, you know, the whole truckers freedom thing that happened in 2020 or whatever, where they all honk on Saturdays now. So there's a fair amount of that here where, you know, the input doesn't jive with the output, to say the least.
So I would say this as a Possifarian, right? Your input is sort of a deep appreciation for the unknown. If you don't mind me, if I'm over talking, let me know.
Yeah.
But I have a deep appreciation of the unknown that I have essentially made a mascot for. That's my input, right? And the output is a very, and forgive me if this sounds rude, but sort of like a celebratory, but also knowingly silly representation of a lot of the mascot's vibe, right? Like, it's pasta, right? Then why are you wearing pirate hats? Like, how are these two things associated? It's like, because we like pirates. It's like, okay, fine, whatever, do it. There's like a weird juxtaposition of a lot of fun things that from the input, it looks like you guys are just being silly to the point where Christians can assume like, hey, you're just making fun of us by trying to lambast what our beliefs are by making them look almost mockingly. Whereas the output is more of like, we don't really care about you guys. We're just having our own fun thing. And if you were to pay attention to what we're doing, go ahead.
Yeah. Thanks for making that point. I mean, that's an important point is Christians shouldn't take it upon themselves to think that we're making fun of them because we don't really care.
Right.
That's just a manifestation of their own self-importance and hubris. Our perspective is that at the end of the day, we don't know what's going on, and so we have to take ourselves instead of taking ourselves seriously, we have to take ourselves with a grain of salt and a spoonful of pasta sauce, right? You know, and there's just no time for
That's well said.
No time really for all this seriousness. What's that?
I would say my input is as an uninformed non-Possifarian, though, who does enjoy hanging out with you once a week, is that the more you pay attention to it, the more you realize it's not just they don't care. It's more of you need to not take yourself seriously. You need to be a little silly once in a while, and you need to kind of enjoy life in a way that also celebrates the fact that, hey, you don't know everything. You are pretty small. So put on a funny hat, eat some pasta, and enjoy being like nice to people, because it's actually way better than seeking self-importance to an all-powerful being that's never going to have a relationship with you, right? And then from the Christian point of view, if my input is, well, I do believe that I am on a higher status than other people who aren't chosen, who aren't having this relationship with God, anything that's trying to replicate that, in my point of view, is a mockery to me. The output of me accusing Possifarians of saying, well, you're just mocking what I believe, is the input of that self-importance that you get from organized religion point of view or a closed-minded dogmatic perspective. In my mind, everything that I see with regard to narcissism, to how we treat each other, is just input output. But I think it applies more than just perspective on what maintains our body. I also think there's an external force to it as well. How I eat food, what I eat, will inform what my body looks. My input of my calories will inform my output of like my body mass index, etc. But also like the kind of friends that I have. Oh, go ahead, Larry.
I was just going to say the input of your ideas as well. The memes that you take in from the world are going to influence what you show the world in return.
Yeah. What if it's okay, Larry, you hit the nail on the head, because what has scientifically been demonstrated is that if you come from a family that does not understand how to, I'm going to use this as a very flat fact. If you go from a family that doesn't understand how to have a nutritious diet, like if a lot of members of your family are obese and you're born into that family, chances are you will also be obese because you are surrounded by friends and family that will share their practices
predisposition, and their input,
exactly, their criteria into you. let's go to a religious point of view. Larry, do you think it's likely that if I was born into a Muslim family, I'd be Muslim too?
Absolutely.
How is that the
thing? Most religions are geographically based. You are the religion of the society you're born into. What else can you do?
Yeah, dread.
Yeah.
Leave your religion.
I just recently had a conversation with a Hindu a female. And, you know, Sikhs, they wear a bangle, right? And so I talked to this woman who was, East Indian, clearly. And I saw the bangle. And I said, oh, are you Sikh? And she says, no, I'm Hindu. And I said, well, you're wearing a bangle. She says, yeah, we wear bangles like the Sikhs do. And I said, well, but your gods are different. And she said, yes. And we had a short conversation. I said, well, did you come from a certain region in India? And she says, yes, came from this. And I said, are they predominantly Hindu there? And she says, yeah. And I said, oh, well, that's interesting. Do you think that if you were born in another region where it was predominantly Sikh, that you'd be a Sikh? And she said, oh, yeah, probably.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
It just, it didn't matter. It's more a cultural thing than it is an actual religious thing. Those things are so intermixed that
there's a lot of violence. I mean, there's a lot of violence and misunderstanding of people as a result of that too, right? So like,
Of course.
It'd be great if everyone just took it as a grain of salt of like, yeah, I'd probably be different if I was in a different location. But to truly ruminate on that and realize, oh, wait a second, then why do I use this system of belief to the point where I refuse access to information or practice by other people just by virtue of me being born in a place with a certain family? And I look to the Pasifarian plight in even Canada, where it's, I can't even get my picture of my driver's license with my hat on because the Christians won't let me. There's more extreme cases of that. But I also want to throw out, I have a lot of friends in this state of Tennessee who claim that they do personal research that led them to believe that their God was the right God, but they only do that personal research in their adulthoods. And it's not hard for me to just say, you know, your name is a Christian name, Luke, Aaron, Matthew, John, like you have an ancient Hebrew name that's in many cases biblical. Your dad has a ancient Hebrew biblical Christian name. Do you ever think you had a fair chance to arrive at any other conclusion with any degree of unbiased nature as just a result of you just, oh, and by the way, in my adulthood, I did some research real quick. It made pleasing to me and it makes sense to me. And this is the conclusion I reached. It's like, that's so funny because when I talk to people who are, and I have it on video, when I talk to people who are Muslim and they do their research and their dad has a Muslim name and they have a Muslim name, they find that the Islam makes the most sense to them and is most rational. How is it the case that you guys are both using the same methods and yet are arriving at the completely different conclusions that are satisfactory to your background? That is something that we should examine, because if we had a higher standard of evidence, if we had that input of, I want a high standard of evidence, I think it would affect our output, which is just being more amenable to the fact that there are different people in the world. I also wanted to throw out good friends. Larry, you had mentioned your geopolitical or your geolocation a lot of times determines both your politics, your religion, your outlook, but it also affects your friend circles, right?
Well, sure.
If you live in a big city.
You can crack that shell if you want to. These days, because of the internet, you can go on the internet and find people outside of your own region and find groups that pretty much align with any philosophies that you have. But it's a lot better now than it used to be. Before the internet, you were born into an information bubble and you rarely were able to find any cracks in it.
Larry, I'm going to ask you a question. Were you born before the internet and what did you have to do?
Absolutely.
So was I.
Yeah, quite a while before. I was born in 1950 and I think the internet came around in the early 90s.
Yeah, I would say late 90s, but before it was
ubiquitous. Yeah, the good thing was I was working in computers and communication and stuff at that time. So I was able to get into it very quickly and understand the ramifications and effectiveness and all that of it. It was
very nice. You're saying you were basically, you had basically, your job was, I had bits and I put it on a plate and I take it out and I walk down the hallway and I give it to
I was
guy.
I was a computer programmer.
You're telling the guys to put the bits around. That's really good.
Well, we did have computer networks before that, but we didn't have internet and interlinked computer networks before that.
Nice. How did you break your social circles then? And how did you extend yourself to other people to get more feedback?
You mean back in my teens and 20s?
Yeah.
Well, reading books is the biggest way that you could do it. Generally, TV and media will reinforce your preconceived religions and notions. How many times have you heard TV news people talking about Jesus back then? And even to this day, who was it? Wolf Blitzer asked a tornado survivor about 10 years ago if she thanked the Lord for surviving from this tornado.
No.
Of course, he got an answer he didn't expect.
Yeah, what did she say?
She said, actually, I'm an atheist.
Good. Yeah. Good.
But I mean, this kind of thing has been going on for a long time. Even back in the day of radio in vaudeville, they always just took it for granted you were a Christian.
Yeah.
Most of them were.
And if that's sort of a reflection of being in such a small echo chamber, that's your input.
And that was reflected by other. Yeah, it's reflected by all the communities around the world. I mean, they were all small echo chambers, but that is all changing now. The new generations coming up are taking exception to a lot of that stuff. Dred, did you have something you wanted to say?
He's currently working right now, but I would say.
Oh, I see.
For me, when I was early 90s, my earliest way for exposure was going to public school. I had a strange benefit that I used to thought was like sort of a non-issue when I was in California, but I was the only black family, more or less one of two only black families in a lot of the towns that we would move to. One or two would be the maximum. And so the majority of friends that I would have would either be white or Mexican. And so I was largely informed by a lot of different kinds of or Asian or a lot of Polynesian, like just a lot of different cultures that I'm constantly exposing myself to as a kid. And normalizing all the interactions that I have. Like, these are my friends that speak Spanish. I'll try to speak some Spanish with them. These are my friends that speak some Korean. I don't know Korean, but I know they got good food. And I know this guy's really good at basketball. So I'm like breaking down all these weird little stereotypes. And we're all interacting with each other. I found that to be like one of the best interactions of learning how to engage with people.
I never did get to travel very much as a kid, but you were very lucky.
But I did move to Georgia in a very rural area in my high school period. And at that time, when I was in that rural area, there were only black people. And one, I didn't know how to interact as well with people who looked just like me and had to remember all their names and couldn't just assume that people would know who I am because I'm the guy that stands out. Uh-huh. Now I'm in a place where I fit in. That was weird. But also, I realized that there was a lot more pressure with regard to how I was seen. Yeah, and how other people interact with and the ideas that they had regarding how other people are and how they interact with each other weren't the same that I had because I came from a different culture. So even though I looked the same, I realized culturally I was very different. And this was just a new hurdle for me to learn how to deal with. My input wasn't so much everyone's different from me and that's totally fine. And I'm just going to absorb that. It was more like people are different in different ways. And I need to learn how to interact with all these nuances as I grow older. And even when I get into my professional career, I saw the same thing too. Dred, I'd love to get your thoughts on the idea of how did this go? Your inner circles when you didn't have internet, how did you come to inform yourself of different perspectives? What's reliable ways that you did that during your youth?
And, can we come back to that after the break?
Absolutely, Larry. Let me go ahead.
We'll jump back into it. This is the Digital Free Thought Radio Hour on WOZO Radio 103.9 LPFM right here in Knoxville, Tennessee. Welcome back to the second half of the Digital Free Thought Radio Hour. I'm Doubter 5, and we're on WOZO Radio, 103.9 LPFM here in Knoxville, Tennessee. Let's take just a moment to talk about the Atheist Society of Knoxville. ASK was founded in 2002. We're in our 21st year now and have 1,100 members. We have weekly in-person meetings every Tuesday evening in Knoxville's Old City at Barley's Tap Room and Pizzeria. Look for us inside at the high top tables, or if it's pretty outside, on the deck. You can find us online on Facebook, meetup.com, or at KnoxvilleAtheist.org, which is our website. You can also just Google Knoxville Atheist. It's just that simple. By the way, if you don't live in Knoxville, you should still go to Meetup and do a search for an atheist group in your town. Don't find one? Start one. That's right.
We're back in. Dredd, I want to know. Tell me what you did to become better informed and well-rounded.
Well, I read a lot, just like Larry indicated. Reading was, I was a nerd, and that was well before nerds were known for being nerdy, I guess. You know, I was just, wasn't an athlete. You know, I always liked science and that kind of thing. So the books were always my real companions. I didn't have a lot of friends
When you say books, do you mean like the philosophy books that you're reading now you were reading even when you were back as a kid? Or was it more of like...
I read a lot of Isaac Asimov.
Science fiction.
Well, both... because he wrote both science books and fiction, right?
He did.
Arthur C. Clarke, Frank Herbert.
Heinlein.
You know, those were... What's that?
Robert Heinlein,
yeah, for sure. And you know, I had access in school. I had access to, you know, Scientific American and, you know, Popular Science and all that kind of stuff. So I spent a lot of time in the library.
Help me out. Did you read those books?
I was good friends with the librarian.
Did you read those books and like did the characters become sort of like your purview for understanding different perspectives, or was it an escape for you? Like, what was the value that you could obtain from getting that book with regard to improving yourself as a person?
Yeah, well, certainly the fiction was a means to, you know, sort of live outside myself and gain other perspectives that way. And then, of course, I was just always interested in learning things. So, you know, like Isaac Asimov became like, you know, sort of my mental friend. He was my, you know, connection with a larger world, you know, Carl Sagan. You know, my parents didn't actually value education. I had opportunities to skip ahead, and it was my parents that actually held me back. But you know, that was just the way they were. Like my dad always prided himself on only having a grade 4 education, and look how far I got.
That's his input, right?
There was a contempt for higher education. And if you spoke in words with more than two syllables, you were talking down to them. You know what I mean? So, right. It wasn't the most intellectually stimulating upbringing I could imagine.
Right. Dredd, I can say, and forgive me if this is overstepping, but it sounds like your dad had an input of not necessarily a deep appreciation for education, or both pride in what he was able to accomplish, but also a recognition of the fact that he missed out on higher tiers of education and spurned it as a result of not being able to get it himself. Maybe there was outside circumstances that kept him from it. Maybe he had parents that like limited his ability. So when he carrying on, that's his output. Just like, I don't care about that. It's a sour grapes, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
He's not in his head, radio listeners.
Yeah, for sure.
But yeah, I can see that in personalities too. I see that even when I am sometimes I'll talk to people and I'll be reluctant to let them know I'm a PhD. And oftentimes when people ask, what do you do? They're expecting like a quick answer, like, oh, I'm a plumber, I'm an electrician, I'm a gardener, I'm a landscape artist. It's really hard to just say I'm a scientist, because then it follows up with, what? Tell me things. So like, what kind of science? What are you talking about? I'm like, okay, well, how do I explain this in like a really cool, fascinating way? And I can, but it takes more than like two words to do it. And so I try to always make sure that I'm recognizing that some people may not have necessarily had the access that I had or the opportunities that I had. And I want to be able to explain my passion without necessarily feel like they were missing out on something at the same time too. It's a really delicate balance. And I feel like that's the input of developing empathy and having empathetic engagements. And the output is being a better, what do you call it? Expressor of the things that you care about in a way that's reflecting of the realities of the people that you're talking to. Larry,
it's about effective communication, right?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. I recognize, Larry, you ever seen kung fu movies? You ever see like,
me?
Yeah,
I loved them.
I know you're into karate and taekwondo, right?
Yeah.
You actually have a black belt, right?
I do. Yeah.
Okay.
I studied Ishinryu karate for 8 years. I got my black belt after 3.5 and kept doing it to help, you know, younger people and do instructing and things like that.
That's awesome. I remember when I saw from my Chinese friend a movie that they gave me. They said, you should watch this movie, because I told them, hey, I love how movies in Asia don't have the same sentimentalities as the ones in America, because Western movies are really hard on the, at least when I was watching movies, a happy ending. And if there's two people, these people fall in love. And if there's always a climax in the last third, but like sometimes Asian movies will do the climax first and then the complete rest of the movie is just the falling action and the repercussions that come with it. And it's really cool to see that. And so a guy who I was good friends with said, I'll show you one of my favorite movies. It was a Chinese movie, and it was one of the first Chinese movies that I saw that wasn't made for American audiences.
Mm-hmm.
And this sounds really ignorant of me, because they didn't have any fighting in it. I saw the whole Chinese movie and I thought, well, when do they fight?
Don't they know kung fu?
Yeah, like, don't they know kung fu? When does the kung fu portion happens? I was watching this whole movie and it blew my mind, like, of course Chinese movies don't have fighting in every single movie. But my input as just a dumb
consumer of that type of,
exactly,
target,
was that
target audience.
Every Chinese movie with Chinese people and their subtitles, and they were wearing a certain kind of clothes, at some point they're going to fight and it's going to look cool. But that wasn't in the case in this movie. And I just thought, man, I really don't know what I don't know, or I don't understand my own biases until I push myself into other people's circles. Right. And whether it's through books, through media, as Larry had mentioned, through school and just interacting with different people, we find that to be the best tool to get people out of the caves that they're potentially born in. And I see that far better with big cities and metropolises. Larry, you'll know this. The bigger the city is, the more different kinds of people that are there.
Oh, yeah.
More often than not, the less dogmatic the thinking is. Just
more liberal, because they're exposed to more points of view.
Right. And change, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if your input is that, your output tends to be, oh, I can deal with different kinds of people. I wonder though, Larry, oh, I'm sorry, Dredd, the idea that some people are still wary of Pasifarianism, is that a reflection of just them not being exposed to enough Pasifarians? And or Larry, the fact that people are wary of atheists, is that just by virtue of the fact that people just don't know?
Well, there's an active program campaign against atheists by many of the preachers out there. They, you know,
that's
the
impossible.
Religious,
I've never heard of such a thing. No, that's not true.
The religious people think they know atheists.
There's no such thing as anti-Pasifarian media or propaganda, right?
Oh yeah, sure. There's
everybody left.
The problem is, like I said already, is that Christians think that Pasifarians are mocking them. That it's about them. It's not about Pastafarians, and it's not about atheists. It's about them. And so there's, it's not an anti-atheist campaign. It's a pro-Christian campaign. They're just, you know, it's not really about the things they don't understand. It's about the things they think they understand, right?
Right. Larry,
that's the way I see it anyway. Because you know, the folks at ICBC, they don't care what I think. They only care what they think. And so they just dismiss what I think as irrelevant to the to the subject and just dismiss me out of hand.
Yeah, which is the basis of evangelicalism right there. They don't care what you think. Yeah, you got to think what they think.
Yeah. Right.
Right.
And,
exactly.
And I look at that input and I say, for ICBC, a class of people that live in a society where they don't have to concern themselves with commoners or a diverse of their electorate, more or less. They just, they're powerful people that only have to interact with themselves and their own close family. And so the idea that different things can enter their circles is something that's changed that they don't need or they don't require, and they can dismiss as readily, despite the fact that it impacts your life in a real way, right? And the
they
scary
have to agree
thing,
with their checks.
And the scary thing with atheism is it's the similar thing with evangelical Christians, because a lot of times they don't interact with atheists. I would say the grand majority of them don't, though, or the grand majority of them do, but they either indoctrinate them before it becomes too much of an issue, or get them into the circle. So it's not so much the fact that there's an input output in my mind. Input output is something that we can maintain ourselves. We can control our friend circles. We can control what we eat, how we input, how we get our information, who we hang out with. But there's also an agenda by bad ideologies, bad critical thinking, bad criteria that are actively trying to dismiss other ideas, different ways of thinking, different perspectives, other sources of change in order to ingrain themselves in society longer. And it is both pervasive, antagonistic, and in my mind, detrimental to advancement of society, because we see time and time again that we benefit when we do have a good interchange of ideas and thoughts. We do have a listener comment also on the idea of souls. This one comes from Dada's Trading Room. I'm going to throw this one up to you. Larry, by Dada's Trading Room, he asks, dude, how do you know that the soul is the same thing as that which you call yourself? That came from our last show last week, Jesus for
Souls. Well, that's not a claim I make.
But what? Yeah. Are you going to sidestep the question?
Well,
how do you know? How do you know? Then take it in the general sense. Take it in the
or
general
the negative.
How do you
know? How do I know?
No, how do you know that?
Well, what we need to do is we need to back up to believing what you have evidence for.
Okay.
You know, and if you're going to believe things without evidence, where do you stop? Are you going to believe in goblins and leprechauns and Bigfoot and UFOs? And, you know, it just never stops. What I do is, you know, if I have evidence for something, if you have evidence for it, show it to me. Let me evaluate that evidence. Now, in 2,000 years, actually more like 5,000 years, religions have been claiming that we have souls, that they know where they're going or what they are, where they're going, how long they live, et cetera, et cetera. These are all knowledge claims that religions are making. All I'm saying is, give me the evidence before you make me try to believe it.
Dredd, I'd love to throw this question out to you. If there was such, I'm not even saying there is such a thing as a soul. I'm just saying that some people claim that there are, and that they are the manifestation of themselves that will go to heaven. How do you know that? How could we possibly know that?
How could you? That's a great question. I mean, no one's ever reported back from the other side. So, you know, remember Houdini, that was his thing, is that he said, if I can, you know, if there's an afterlife, I'll figure out a way to come back and let you know.
Yeah. I think, to our listener question,
there's always such a focus on the answer and not so much a focus on how we arrive at the answer. So what I would say is, I want to really highlight the fact that you asked, how do we know if something is the case, because that's the true gem. And that's such a great question to ask. And we should really be asking that for everything, honestly, right? And whether the answers that we come up with that are only as justified as the path that we use to get there, right? And so if I said, hey, how do I know that the soul is real, and that is really myself? Well, I don't know. I just understand that there are claims or models presented to me by people who believe that on religious grounds, and the merits of their religious dogmatic points of view are tenuous at best. And so I'm going to reduce my confidence in the conclusion only to the validity of the method that they're using. You know, like that's it at the end of the day. Go ahead. Larry, you first.
I was just going to say that even the people who claim to have knowledge of these souls have contradictory claims about what happens to them after they die and what gets them into their paradise and what they get when they get there, et cetera, et cetera. It just goes out on, and they never present any evidence to support any of it.
Good point, Stillery.
Yeah.
Dredd?
Well, I was, you know, the thing about the soul too is, you know, it's very clearly wishful thinking just by virtue of the fact that people don't think it through. Like, what is the soul made of? Like, if you have Alzheimer's, is your soul also got Alzheimer's? Like,
if you have dementia,
old are you when you go to heaven? Like, you know,
all these,
you know, sort of penetrating questions people don't ask. They're just happy to say, I've got a soul and I'm going to paradise. And that's where the questioning and investigation ends. And that is a demonstration of the phenomenon of wishful thinking.
But here's the idea.
You don't investigate what you just wish to be true.
Yeah.
But the thing is, when I have wishful thinking, I get to believe in things that I want to be true without having to look at them in detail.
That's right.
But yeah, if I were to look at the reality, if I were to take even more of a scientific poetic say and say, hey, my body's going to become soil. The air I'm breathing is going to still be around in this atmosphere for as long as the earth exists. And the water in my body will go back into the water cycle. A lot of people are like, I don't like that. Therefore, it must not be true. But from a scientific point of view, there's some comfort in that.
Absolutely will. Yeah.
Yeah. I had a Thanksgiving meal with a friend of mine who said, I believe in reincarnation, and he was a white guy. And why did I stipulate that? Because we were talking with a person who was from India about afterlives. And he had mentioned, well, I believe what you believe, but it wasn't the same thing because not all Hindus believe in that version of like reincarnation, not the way how he described it. And he just says, I just believe I'm just going to keep being another person, another person, another person, even when I die. And I believe that because it makes me comfortable. And I just kept eating my food because I didn't want to engage in religious conversations around a Thanksgiving circle. I'm not that guy. But the idea that you can believe something to make yourself comfortable is a very appealing force. And I think everybody does it. But the thing is, as Dredd had pointed out, when you look at the details of even the things that make you comfortable when you believe it, you realize, why do I believe this? This the fine print of this belief that I just took for granted is actually really, really disturbing. Even the concept of living for an eternity in heaven could be a problematic concept. Larry, you had mentioned that you'd get bored.
Oh, and in heaven? Yeah.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter how many things there are to do in heaven. If you do one thing for a trillion years, you're going to get bored with it. And if you do a million things for a trillion years, you're going to get bored with it. And
right.
And there is literally nothing you can do about it. You just have to continue to exist. No thanks.
Right. I would not want to, if I was a soldier, I wouldn't want to have to be reincarnated and go through boot camp again. Like, I wouldn't want to be reincarnated and go through grad school again. Like, that's a one-time life experience that I want. Same thing with third grade, fourth grade. Like, I have to do 14 years of school, 18 years plus college, 24 plus graduate college. Like, that's so much time. I don't want to spend that much time sitting at a desk relearning things over and over again, or being picked up by my mom after school waiting for a bus over and over again.
Well, theoretically, also, you would continue to retain the memories that you learned when you went through it the first time. So
really?
Then it would get extremely boring because you already know all
terrible.
That stuff, and you'd have to go through it again and again and again.
Dredd, I can't imagine. I couldn't imagine. So the fine print of living forever seems to be a lot more complicated. It's
For sure.
I would like
be
to.
I mean, you know, what? How does the soul? I mean, how would the soul even remember stuff? Right.
Right.
I mean, you think about your brain, is where all your memories are stored.
Right.
What is it? What is it? What is it that's retaining memories when you're no longer alive?
No, that's right.
You know, like things like that. Just, you know, and you bring them across to people, and they go, "I never really thought about that." Yeah, you're right. You never really thought about that.
Yeah,
that is and so good. So
one
good.
Little thing about ghosts: if ghosts are souls, as soon as a ghost materialized next to you, they would go off in that direction at about 10,000 miles an hour because they are not they float, right? So they're not affected by gravity. Gravity's going,
right.
I mean, Earth is going through space at 10,000 miles an hour.
Yeah.
So they would just materialize and be left behind.
And wow. So you're just saying we're running into ghosts all the time.
The galaxy is self-moving.
Yeah, sure. All these different motions involved.
That is such a good random. I've listened to Larry rant about souls for the last maybe, I feel like, 15 years now. And this is the first time he brought that up, I feel. And that's such a funny point that, like, as soon as a soul exists, it's going to zip away because it doesn't have matter. It's just going to fly away. Why is it gravitationally attracted to Earth, right? Like, that makes some sense. Something you mentioned made me think about another conversation we had around that same Thanksgiving table where someone had mentioned the whole idea of, well, when bodies die, they lose weight. They lose, like, 0.3 grams. And who's to say that's a soul? And I did respond to that, and I said, who's to say it is? And is weight a good way to know if a soul exists? And I thought of something where only now, just now from what you had mentioned, is how much does a memory weigh? Right?
Right.
And do big memories weigh more than short memories? Do long-term memories weigh more than short-term memories? How do we measure a weight of a memory? Is it something that we can't weigh at all, but we can still say exists, right? Well, then why are we using weight as a determination of something existing or not existing? Like, we need a better system.
Right. Even in computers, memory doesn't weigh anything. I mean, because, I mean, you've got the hard drive or whatever memory that you store it on. It has a certain weight by itself, but it doesn't have any memories in it until you put something on it, like a program or a picture or something like that. And that's just flipping the bit. And that doesn't add or remove any weight to the device. Right. So it has no memories. I mean, memories have no weight according to computer memory.
So, and the only thing
you do is,
right. And where is that memory in your brain? Can I like pluck that one out? You can damage my brain to the point where it's not there anymore, but it's hard to put memories back in. The weird thing is our brain, when intact, operates in a network similar to like how websites exist, right? In that there are emergent features of a well-operating brain. And if I were to damage my brain, those features wouldn't exist, but it's not necessarily a function of, oh, I took out that part that, like, when I cut off my brain and now I don't know my name anymore. It's not so much like my name exists in that part of my brain they took out. It's just, you gave me brain damage and I, you hurt my brain. I wish I could explain this a bit more coherently, but the idea is my brain, when it functions well, is a balance. And when I disturb that balance, everything that's beautiful that comes from it is gone. Similar to like a guy. Go ahead, Dredd.
Well, my mom, of course, has got advanced Alzheimer's. Hmm. And, you know, there's virtually nothing left of who she was as a person.
Hmm.
You know, and that's what happens to the brain and the personality and the mind and the memories and everything. There's, as you say, there's no separating these things. It's all, you are your body.
Yes.
And your brain is a part of your body. And your mind is an emergent property of your body, not just of your mind, but of all your sensory inputs. It's a one cohesive unit, not this, sort of Cartesian, where there's a mind and a body.
It's not like a little lodge where there's a chair where all your grade school memories go and there's a wall.
There's no homunculus.
Yeah. There's no guy running around pulling levers like inside out.
There's no homunculus in there.
Yes, exactly.
This isn't Oz, right? Operating
it's not a little miniature version of you being like, I'm pulling
That's right.
the stomach move. But it, and that's true whether it's makes you feel good or not feel good. And so if that's the case, it to maintain a quality of life, not necessarily a duration of life, but a quality of life at the highest optimal limit possible, you got to inform yourself. You have to feed yourself, and you got to surround yourself with what my opinion is, healthy inputs to expect healthy outputs, because you don't get one without the other. In fact, we see more and more time again that if you put in poison, you get a poisonous result on the outside. So if you are stressed out, find good ways to input yourself so that you get good stress relievers or good. If you don't have enough information, get more information. If you don't have a good diet, get a good diet. Like, these things will have really good impacts on you. And it's not just for virtue of me saying that as a deepity. It's just a demonstrable case of input output, in my opinion. For my input, I would say, as Larry had mentioned, it's always good to understand what life was like before the internet. So try reading some books. Something I would recommend, honestly, would be his name is Lucas Riley. He writes for Mental Floss, which is both a hard copy and an internet available magazine. But what he does is really great cinematic breakdowns of events that happened in history, including the Sequoias, 13 interesting facts about our English dictionary and how they came about. And when I say that, I don't mean that in like a clickbaity sense. Like, each fact is, wow, there should be a whole book about this. He wrote about Pete Uphole, who goes spelunking in clays, how Alaska came to be a part of America. There's so many intricate facts of things that I've taken for granted about how we've come about as a country, that an Americana in general. He's a really good recapper of that and tells so in a really interesting way that broadens my perspective and deepens my appreciation for the country that I'm a part of. Larry, anything that you'd like to add? Go on ahead. I know you talked about souls and how they exist, and how there's no way that souls don't exist whatsoever. Go for it.
I think I covered that pretty well, and I'm happy to cover it again on my website.
Okay. Are you back? Was there anything that you'd like to plug before you're out?
Yeah, I think you were talking about a podcast there. I've been listening to this one called Everything Everywhere Daily, and it's a little 15-minute podcast every day that he puts about facts about the world and history and all that kind of stuff. I found it very interesting and very packed full of information. So that might be something to check out.
What is it called again? Everything Everywhere Daily?
Everything Everywhere Daily.
Nice. Okay, cool. Very cool. Can I throw one last one out too? There's also another one called Everything Lives, which is interviews with inanimate objects. Party fans, whoopee cushions, bagels, stools. And now they're doing a special season where it's just animals, kangaroos, jellyfish, etc. And it's fun to listen to a person pretend to be a thing and give their honest inputs of life as that thing, because you just understand things on a deeper appreciation. And the personalities that they give them are so fitting, and it's so rewarding to just have like a nice little diversion in your life and gain some perspective. I think that's also useful too. But Everything Everywhere Daily and then Everything Talks, I both recommend those too. Larry, go on ahead.
My content particularly can be found at digitalfreethought.com. Be sure to click on the blog button for a radio show archives, atheist songs, and many articles on the subject. And my YouTube channel is at Doubter 5. Remember, everybody is going to somebody else's hell. The time to worry about it is when they prove that heavens and hells and souls are real. Until then, don't sweat it. Enjoy your life. And we'll see you next Wednesday night at 7 o'clock here on WOZO Radio. Say bye, everybody.
Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.